Tennessee just sounds perfect.
Whether that's live music, the crack of a campfire, or kids laughing on an adventure.
To start planning your trip, visit tnvacation.com.
Tennessee sounds perfect.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Ridiculous History is a production of iHeartRadio. Welcome to the show, Ridiculous Historians. As always, thank you so much for tuning in. It is a dark and stormy mid-afternoon here in Atlanta, Georgia. I'm feeling the mood. Our super producer, Casey Pegram, has my new favorite virtual background on the Zoom. And my name is Ben.
My name is Noel. Yeah, it's fine, dog, but just the flames. And I guess in this scenario, Casey,
I'm hanging out. I'm the dog in this picture. Yeah,
you're the dog, and everything's fine, right? Everything's fine.
Everything's great. Everything's yeah, okay. It's cool.
Oh yeah, we're not. Yeah, we best things going on. Best left to unpack to others. But needless to say, it has been. I think Ben described it as like a year long week or something like that, which I would completely agree with.
There's a quote from Lenin. He says there are decades where nothing happens, and weeks where decades happen. I feel like that's kind of where we are right now.
Mm-hmm. And who was it who said that any society is 7 days without food from a revolution? I'll find that and post it. Today we're exploring a story that a lot of people don't know about, and for MacGyver fans in the audience, you are going to enjoy this one. I'll always remember when I learned about all the improvised medical procedures that people created or invented out of necessity, like, you know, using glue to seal up a wound or duct tape or something like that. And you hear some of that become modern medical practice. But where does this come from? We found some older practices, old enough that they might surprise you in today's episode.
Yeah, do you mind if I very quickly just read an excerpt from a poem about this the very topic of our show today?
Oh, yeah, please. I love poetry, by all means. I'm wondering if I know which one it is, too. I want to see.
This is a new one to me. And I'm just going, it's got like three sections. I'm not going to read the whole thing. I'm just going to read the last section. This is some cathedral to die in. Sunlight on stained glass, arched cloisters. Like a real cathedral, there's a Catholic priest in a black three-peaked hat. Kyrie eleison, stench of gangrene and piss, a nurse in a white apron, replaces his drenched dressing with dog-toothed sphagnum moss. It's magic, she says, magic, to sweeten you as you go. And that's a poem by an anonymous poet, specifically talking about the use of sphagnum moss as a wound dressing during World War 1, and it occurs in 3 chapters, with the first one being about a young couple kind of back at home, and then the man being sent off to war, and then in the third one he, you know, is laying dying in a cathedral overseas, and is attended to by what could only really be described as like a guardian angel type situation, dressing the wound in this moss. And that might sound weird, the idea of packing a wound with moss, but it turns out it was a much more available and efficient dressing than even something like cotton or gauze.
Yeah, this sounds weird to phrase it this way, but there's a morbid and fascinating thing about war, and that's war leads to great invention. A lot of things that we take for granted nowadays were discovered in war-related research, and medicine made huge advances in World War I, right, where that anonymous poem takes place, 1916, I believe you said?
That's right.
This, you know, we don't want to ignore the fact that World War I is often called the first mass killing of the 20th century, with like around 10 million military deaths alone. Again, that's just 10 million military deaths. But we also see an inspiring story of doctors who were doing everything they could to help soldiers survive these new dangerous weapons of war.
Yeah, and it wasn't even the weapons of war that always resulted in their deaths. It was, you know, complications because of any number of injuries. Like a small injury left untreated on the battlefield could result in sepsis or gas gangrene. And that early in World War I, that had been a huge problem because of the conditions in the trenches. We know that the cleanliness of these kind of foxhole trench kind of situations were not up to snuff, for sure. I mean, they were like digging latrines in the ground, and there was like human waste everywhere, and possibly even decaying bodies, and, you know, just any number of unsanitary conditions. And that means that, you know, and not to mention the lack of ability to bathe or change clothes and all of that. So there would be like bodily kind of filth residue like all over clothes and littered across the battlefields, and this can get into these wounds, even a small wound, and cause sepsis, which is a condition that results from an infection and can absolutely lead to death.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's an important fact to hit as well. Even surviving an initial wound, your immune system might be so compromised already, you might have pre-existing injuries, you are in a very, very filthy place. So people would tend to die from things that maybe didn't seem like the initial major causes of death one might imagine in war. And that's why we see so many advances in the field of medicine at this time. Ambulances weren't really a thing until World War I, or antiseptic even, right? Like sepsis, septic. Like you pointed out, Noel, anesthesia. Thank goodness none of us were alive before 1916. I'm a wuss on any medical operation.
Oh God, even the thought of it makes me squeamish. But yeah, you know, it makes you think about like, you know, someone's pulling a bullet out or something like that, or dressing a wound or stitching up a wound, and they give you like a leather belt to bite down on. That was like the equivalent of anesthesia at the time. And it was because of the horrific conditions and all of the suffering that went into the early days of World War I that these things were in fact developed. But there's a guy by the name of Charles Cathcart, who was an army surgeon in 1915. He is also a bit of a history buff, and he knew that using bog mosses known as sphagnum had been something that was very successful in ancient times, even for dressing like really egregious wounds. And so he decided to run some tests and established a program. It kind of reminds me of that corporation that sort of enlisted like school kids to capture fireflies for their industrial product. What was it, Ben?
Yeah, the Sigma Firefly Scientists Club. That's what they call themselves. They're based in Missouri. This company wanted kids to hunt firebugs, fireflies, because they could use the bioluminescent
the juice
stuff. Yeah. The reason their butts glow, a thing called luciferase, to detect life forms. They built life detecting kits with them.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Well, this is, you know, that was obviously for profit. And of course, as we talked about, war does a couple of things. It causes technological advancement. It also makes certain sectors of the economy a hell of a lot of money. So, you know, while it's not all entirely altruistic, this certainly was something that Charles Cathcart spearheaded in order to kind of figure out how to, you know, create a repeatable dressing that would be really helpful in the battlefield. So he got people across the UK, started a program to collect these bog mosses. And it would ultimately become the most widely used field dressing in the United Kingdom and in the Imperial Land Forces. And it became like a part of their kit that they carried, or even it was, I believe, sewn into the inside of their uniforms in the event that they were injured. They could actually, like, you know, stuff it with this this material until they were able to get more, you know, direct medical attention. And so there are these swamps or bogs that you'd hear about all across the UK. Something like Bodmin Moor, that's in the north of Shetland. Sphagnum moss has some really interesting qualities beyond just, you know, use as a field dressing. It retains much more liquid than cotton. Like, I think it can hold like 3 times its own weight in liquid or something like that, and it distributes it more evenly. It's also cooler and softer, and weirdly, it being an organic material that exists in swamps doesn't irritate the skin as much as cotton. That blows my mind. And it could be gathered very cheaply and quickly.
You know, one thing I love about these kind of stories is it shows that even now in the modern day or in our modern age, the technology that we as humans create often pales in comparison to the natural stuff that was already around. Like, we, you know, some of our biggest scientific breakthroughs have been things where we learned to mimic forms and functions that existed in nature already. And, you know, I think also we should point out that part of this peat moss decision, or part of this peat moss discovery, came from a desperate MacGyver attempt. People didn't, you know, do sedate research into peat moss and then say, oh, okay, yeah, why don't we try it out? We got all this moss. Instead, they were searching for an alternative to bandages, which were in very short supply because literal tons of people were being injured.
Yeah, there was this guy named W. Watson Shane of the Royal College of Surgeons in England, and he was one of the first people that realized that sepsis was a real issue and kind of helped try to get the groundswell going to come up with a solution, like you said. And that was everything from using like chlorine solutions to spray down these wounds to coming up with alternatives to creating bandages that had like carbolic acid or formaldehyde or even mercury chloride. And all these are not things you hear about. These obviously were failed experiments, and, you know, mainly none of them worked. And it was truly, to your point, Ben, because of a shortage of cotton that this really became an issue, and they were kind of at a loss. And that's when the British Army surgeon Charles Cathcart really saved the day, because, like I said, he kind of knew about some of the stuff from antiquity, the notion of using these mosses to stuff wounds. And they kind of took that and ran with it.
Yeah. Peat moss, also, you know, street name sphagnum, which I can't decide whether that's my least favorite word of the day or my most favorite word of the day. But anyway, sphagnum, which sounds like a very strange sort of spaghetti, is common in that area you described in Shetland. And it basically thrives in cold, damp climates. By itself, it doesn't look really impressive. It's tiny. It's a little star-shaped plant. But for thousands and thousands of years, people in the region have been preserving bog bodies, they're called, in peat moss, in the peat. And it's also been used as fuel. Cathcart is kind of reapplying something that ancient people knew about. We found that there are some sources from the Gaelic record who said that people fighting in the ancient battle of Clontarf were documented doing the same thing. Well, sort of the same thing. They were packing their wounds with moss, I believe.
It's also something that was used by Native Americans as absorbent material to line their children's cradles with, and used as kind of like a naturally occurring diaper because of those absorbent qualities. They were even used in the Napoleonic and Franco-Prussian Wars, but it wasn't really until this, you know, need came about in World War One with these men just, you know, suffering in agony and dying left and right, that they realized, okay, we've kind of got something on our hands here. And it was very readily available in the UK.
Yeah. And our guy Cathcart teams up with a botanist named Isaac Bailey Balfour, and they're looking into this moss, right? Because peat moss, this happens pretty often with plants, right? Peat moss is sort of a group name describing several different species. They found two species in particular that seemed like they would be able to function as natural bandages, and they wrote an article about it in the Scotsman's Science and Nature section, where they were basically pitching moss to the crowd. You know, not quite snake oil level, but they were like, look, I'm a botanist, I'm a doctor, we know our stuff, and, you know, we agree moss is the right thing for you. They also said something that was pretty hardcore. This is in the article. Fas est et ab host docere. It is right to be taught even by the enemy. That's movie level, man.
That's good. Is that French or is that like Latin? I think it's French.
Latin, I believe.
Ah, yes. And it pretty quickly started developing some level of consensus. Some other field surgeons started to chime in. The Lieutenant Colonel E.P. Sewell, who worked at the General Hospital in Alexandria, responded to the article saying, yeah, it's absorbent, far more than cotton wool. And also, this is something we haven't mentioned, has a remarkable deodorizing property. Because let's not forget, if you're gangrenous or if you're like, you know, wounds, smell, that can be a real issue. So this was helping that side of it too. And they started doing some kind of, I don't know, call them clinical trials, I guess, for lack of a better term. But they started kind of seeing that these things were absolutely true and could be measured. Sphagnum moss could hold up to 22 times its own weight in liquid. I said at the top of the show something like 5 times. That was totally off. Crazy. 22 times its own weight in liquid. So it is absolutely twice as absorbent as cotton. And Cathcart was quoted in some of his research saying, whereas a pad of absorbent cotton allows sanious discharges to penetrate and pass beyond to the bedclothes, a pan of sphagnum absorbs and holds up the discharges. In other words, it wouldn't leak out onto your, you know, your bed, your mattress, you know, your sheets.
Yeah, and I want to shout out sanious as, you know, forget what I said about sphagnum. Sanius is probably my favorite word. So sphagnum, you're officially my least favorite word. Sorry about that. This was a new word for me. Sanius sounds like maybe it means something clean because of that, you know, that commonality with sanitary, but it means quite the opposite. Sanius means something consisting of a thin mixture of serum and pus with a slight bloody tinge. So it's super appetizing stuff.
This episode of Ridiculous History is brought to you by Mint Mobile.
If we've learned anything in the process of doing this podcast, just living life, it's that there's always a catch.
So when we heard that for a limited time, all Mint Mobile wireless plans are $15 a month if you get a 3-month plan, we looked at each other and we thought, nah, what's the catch?
But here's the thing. In this case, there isn't one. Mint Mobile's secret sauce is that they sell wireless service online.
Yeah, they cut out that middleman cost of retail stores and they pass those sweet, sweet savings directly to you. We're not joking. We have tried out Mint Mobile ourselves and it's super convenient. And it actually, like, we tried to find a catch and there's not one.
So to get this new customer offer and your new 3-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/ridiculous.
That's mintmobile.com/ridiculous. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/ridiculous.
$45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first 3-month plan only. Speeds slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan.
Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details. This episode is brought to you by eBay Motors. eBay Motors is here for the ride.
Noel, do you remember your favorite car?
Well, yeah. It was an Eddie Bauer edition Ford Explorer.
Oh, that's and cool.
I just remember it was my dad's. I was a hand-me-down car kind of kid. Dad would buy a new car. I'd get that car. And I just remember feeling so awesome being up above everybody. Like I was in Mad Max or something, you know?
I had a lot of land yachts that I loved. I had Pontiac Bonnevilles.
Right.
Oh, I never had an El Camino. My dad had one, and that was a real interesting use of our collective time, keeping that thing running. But I think these cars all kind of speak to us because they were such a fundamental part of our lives. Do you remember when I had that Monte Carlo?
That's what I meant. I said El Camino, and I meant Monte Carlo.
I miss it so. The Monte Carlo was tough. I owned a series of Monte Carlos, and the last one, God bless it, I had to learn a lot about car maintenance just to keep that guy running.
Totally.
It still was like a perfect fit. It's almost like finding your true love. You know, like when you recently got a car a few years back now.
Oh, man. And funny you should say that. That particular perfect fit was the Honda Fit, which I love dearly. But, Ben, it's getting a little long in the tooth. And while it's been incredibly reliable up to now, it's getting to that age where I might have to start looking for some parts here and there to keep it running.
Mm-hmm. And that's where eBay Motors comes in. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly.
Brake kits, LED headlights, roof racks, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it.
And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back.
Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash.
So keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com.
Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hey, Noel, have you ever wanted to wake up to something better?
Oh, boy, have I ever been.
Well, this is where Avalon Waterways comes in. How does waking up to a medieval castle, an ancient cathedral, a rolling vineyard, or a charming cobblestone village sound to you?
Well, here on Ridiculous History, that's right up our street, Ben, our charming cobblestone street. So I can say it sounds pretty good to me.
You're absolutely right, Noel. Avalon Waterways has redefined cruising in so many different ways. They've got the widest opening windows. They've got beds that face the passing scenery. So wherever you go, you have a front row seat to the views of the world. And not only do you wake up in the best staterooms in the entirety of the business, but you're waking up in a new port every day, right in the heart of these amazing historic cities.
Ah, Ben, sign me up. Open your eyes to a better view and a different kind of cruising. One with smaller ships, bigger experiences, fewer people, and more of everything.
Limited time special offers await at AvalonWaterways.com. Now, with the benefit of modern science, we've drilled down into the nuts and bolts of what makes sphagnum, this moss, so good at being an improvised bandage.
Yeah, and it's really interesting stuff. It's all about the cellular structure of the moss. And there is a researcher at SUNY Environmental Science and Forestry named Robin Kimmerer, who has done extensive research on moss, which seems, you know, on the surface, like the world's most boring scientist, but it's pretty fascinating stuff. She wrote a book called Gathering Moss, A Natural and Cultural History of Mosses. I'm sorry, I can't help but just say that does sound like the most boring book ever of all time, but not to be the case, because it turns out that sphagnum is really fascinating stuff. It is, it's 90% dead, which I thought was fascinating because, you know, you think of plants having healing properties. You think it has something to do with like them being imbued with some kind of life-giving power. And no, the stuff is dead, 90%. And that's important because it's empty. It needs to be that way so that it can be filled with water. That's how it functions in the bog and keeping the ecosystem a certain level of acidic, I believe is what it is. And that's what allows it to soak up blood and all of that. What is it? Sanious fluids, Ben?
Yeah, Sanius fluids. It also has antiseptic properties, as we mentioned. We know how those work. So thanks again to Professor Kammerer here. The cell walls of these plants have a particular sugar molecule that creates, I'm going to quote Kammerer here, creates an electrochemical halo around all of the cells. And this means that the cell walls end up being negatively charged. Ben, why are you talking about electrochemical stuff? We're talking about antiseptic stuff. Just walk with us here. These negative charges make it such that positively charged nutrient ions, those are things like sodium or potassium, get attracted to the sphagnum. And as the moss soaks up all the negatively charged nutrients in soil, it releases positively charged ions. This basically, long story short, this makes the environment around the moss kind of, like you said, it makes it acidic. And that's part of the reason that bog bodies are so creepily well preserved, even when they're thousands and thousands of years old.
So back to the war. The Great War, the first, mass killing of the 20th century. It continued to rage and was awful and continued to produce many, many deaths and horrible injuries that needed to be dressed. And so the need for bandages just kept going up and up and up. And sphagnum really was crucial because it provided this raw material that could be gathered. The Canadian Red Cross Society in Ontario in 1916 got in on it and started providing dressings using sphagnum, over 1 million of them. And nearly 2 million more like padded compresses and 1 million pads. And it was all with moss that was collected in British Columbia and Nova Scotia, which has very similar kind of bog-like coastal regions. And by 1918, you were seeing more than 1 million of these dressings a month being sent out in Britain to hospitals all over Europe. Also, even as far as Mesopotamia or Egypt.
Yeah, and people started taking collective action around the United Kingdom and in Canada and the U.S. as well. Folks got together and they organized basically moss hunts to try to scare up bandage alternatives. But they called them moss drives, you know, like a fun drive or something. And local papers would announce them. A lot of adult men were off fighting in the war, or candidly already died. So many, you know, a great deal of the volunteers here were women and children. And they would get these weird instructions. One that sounds kind of fun. There was an announcement in the UK that told people, when you get your moss, fill the sack up, your moss sack, not all the way up, like maybe 75%, and then drag it to any kind of hard ground and then just dance on it for a while. I mean, there was a reason. I should put that part in. It was kind of like crushing grapes or something. They were stomping on this stuff to get as much water out as they could.
Yeah, and kind of distribute it a little bit. And exactly. And on the other side of the war, Germany was really into using this stuff too. And, you know, they have, again, also like Canada and the UK, similar climates and terrains that are very conducive to this kind of moss growing. So they have a lot of bogs in northeastern Germany and in Bavaria that they would just, you know, pillage for the stuff. And very similarly, they only maybe a little less like, hey, go team. They actually used Allied prisoners of war to go out and gather these bog mosses. There was even like a headline about a gentleman who walked over 1,000 miles to collect mosses. And, you know, the ones that weren't like, you know, basically POWs that were forced to do it were almost always volunteers. And it really did seem to make a huge difference. It obviously wasn't the same as some sort of life-saving, you know, serum or, you know, antiseptic or anesthetic, but it definitely kept people in a pinch from getting, you know, sepsis and dying on the battlefield before they had a chance to actually have their wounds properly looked at. Because you have to remember, too, this is like the first line of defense. If you get shot or winged on the battlefield and you need to, you know, bide some time, this is what you have sewn into the lining of your uniform, and you know rip it out and cover your wound so it doesn't get any crap in it that's going to make it get infected. And then you're able to kind of live to fight another day, or at least to get a proper medic to look at you.
I feel like I'm almost going into infomercial mode here, but wait, there's more. There was one country that still had a lot of cotton, and that was the United States. The United States had quite a bit of cotton, and they understood, you know, these bandages, these plant-based bandages were making a big splash, right, in society. And they ended up trading gas mask parts with other countries so that they could get a moss supply, because they found out sphagnum bandages weren't just an alternative. They were better than the cotton bandages that everyone once had been so worried about. They also, people also, kind of like when you see recipe forums and people start arguing about the best way to, you know, cook a steak or to, you know, bake a cake. It seems like different countries and institutions started arguing about how they preferred to do their bandages.
And also, let's not forget that this was a renewable resource. They could, you know, gather this stuff. And as long as they didn't mess with the layer of peat underneath, they call it peat moss because it grows in peat. What is peat again, Ben? I think of it in terms of like peated whiskey. It's a material that can be burned to make a aromatic smoke that is used in the distilling process of certain Scotch whiskeys. But it occurs organically, and I believe it's a very nutrient rich material. But what is it exactly?
It's essentially partially decayed vegetable matter. So it, you'll see it called a brown deposit. It's not quite like soil. Like you've heard of people cutting peat and stuff like that to burn it. It's gunky.
Okay, checks out. So yeah, you wouldn't want to disturb that layer because that's what's going to cause it to be able to continue to regrow. But Kimmerer, that botanist we mentioned, did say that, you know, when you have folks coming out and tromping through these bogs all the time getting the stuff, there is going to be some kind of collateral damage to the peat layers. And that is why it's a good thing that we don't use peat as bandages anymore. Cotton is much more readily available now, of course, and it works just fine. If we continued to forage for this peat, it could potentially damage those ecosystems significantly. They're called peatlands, and they're full of this sphagnum and other types of mosses that have been accumulating carbon for thousands of years in these underground layers of peat. And if you start clearing away the top layers, and those bottom layers are eventually going to dry out, and then that carbon can leak out into the atmosphere. And that can be a problem because peatlands actually play a role in global climate change. Peat can be used as biofuel, and peatlands are very rich ecosystems on their own that support a lot of rare species of plants. Carnivorous plants, I believe?
Yeah, that was a new one for me too, Noel. The carnivorous plants of the boglands, which sounds like, you know, sounds like a story you would read in Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark or something. But this is true, you know. And Professor Kimmerer argues that the same things that make this moss great for bandaging are the same things that make it great for creating and perpetuating bogs. And now, you know, there's a lot of development in the United Kingdom, right, in general. So if we take that particular example, sphagnum, these peatlands, these bogs, are actually these incredibly biodiverse pockets of the region because, you know, given the acidity involved here, the plants that live in the bogs are highly adapted to a very strange and unique environment. So there are a lot of distinct creatures that live here. But, you know, if you're like, forget it, guys, I am convinced no more cotton bandages for me. I believe a while back, some people in the U.S. were experimenting with using this moss for other sanitary supplies. They called it sphagnakins. Doesn't roll off the tongue exactly.
Ben, earlier when you were talking about how sphagnum creates acidity, it made me think of how it has a really strong pH. Sphagnum.
It's pH. Yes.
That's my. I'm done. I'm here. I'm here all week, or at least for the rest of the afternoon.
This episode is brought to you by eBay Motors. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Noel, do you remember your favorite car?
Well, yeah. It was a an Eddie Bauer edition Ford Explorer.
Oh, that's and cool.
I just remember it was my dad's. I was a hand-me-down car kind of kid. Dad would buy a new car. I'd get that car. And I just remember feeling so awesome being up above everybody. Like I was in Mad Max or something, you know?
I had a lot of land yachts that I loved. I had Pontiac Bonnevilles.
Right.
Oh, I never had an El Camino. My dad had one, and that was a real interesting use of our collective time, keeping that thing running. But I think these cars all kind of speak to us because they were such a fundamental part of our lives. Do you remember when I had that Monte Carlo?
That's what I meant. I said El Camino, and I meant Monte Carlo.
I miss it so. The Monte Carlo was tough. I had a series of Monte Carlos, and the last one, God bless it, I had to learn a lot about car maintenance just to keep that guy running.
Totally.
But it still was like a perfect fit. It's almost like finding your true love. You know, like when you recently got a car a few years back now.
Oh, man. And funny you should say that. That particular perfect fit was the Honda Fit, which I love dearly. But, Ben, it's getting a little long in the tooth. And while it's been incredibly reliable up to now, it's getting to that age where I might have to start looking for some parts here and there to keep it running.
Mm-hmm. And that's where eBay Motors comes in. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly.
Brake kits, LED headlights, roof racks, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it.
And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back.
Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash.
So keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com.
Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hey, Noel, have you ever wanted to wake up to something better?
Oh, boy, have I ever, Ben.
Well, this is where Avalon Waterways comes in. How does waking up to a medieval castle, an ancient cathedral, a rolling vineyard, or a charming cobblestone village sound to you?
Well, here on Ridiculous History, that's right up our street, Ben, our charming cobblestone street. So I can say it sounds pretty good to me.
You're absolutely right, Noel. Avalon Waterways has redefined cruising in so many different ways. They've got the widest opening windows. They've got beds that face the passing scenery. So wherever you go, you have a front row seat to the views of the world. And not only do you wake up in the best staterooms in the entirety of the business, but you're waking up in a new port every day, right in the heart of these amazing historic cities.
Ah, Ben, sign me up. Open your eyes to a better view and a different kind of cruising. One with smaller ships, bigger experiences, fewer people, and more of everything.
Limited time special offers await at avalonwaterways.com.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
This is one of those stories that doesn't get the attention it deserves. Obviously, you know, I think I speak for all three of us when I say we love people who are experts at incredibly specific things. If you are a firefly expert, if you are a, what are the ant experts? Myrmecologists. You're one of those.
Or the country's foremost expert in underwater explosions.
No, yes, that's right. Yes, Dr. Rachel Lance.
Uh-huh.
Oh, if you're listening, Rachel, you ruined action movie explosions for us, but you did the right thing. Thank you so much for doing that. Oh, that was a great interview. I do want to leave us with, we started today's episode with a quotation from Poets of World War One, and Poets of World War One had a lot of important things to say, right? And many of them died very, very young. There's one poem that if you guys are okay with, I'd like to read a little excerpt from.
Awesome.
This one, I think, gives a good picture of what the situation was on the ground. This is just the very end of it. If in some smothering dreams you two could face behind the wagon that we flung him in and watch the white eyes writhing in his face, his hanging face like a devil sick of sin, if you could hear At every jolt, the blood come gargling from the froth-corrupted lungs, obscene as cancer, bitter as the cud of vile incurable sores on innocent tongues, my friends. You would not tell with such high zest to children ardent for some desperate glory that old lie, dulce et decorum est pro patria mori, which is Latin for it is sweet and fitting to die for one's country.
Heavy, man. Heavy stuff.
Sorry, it's like my favorite poem from that time. Sorry.
It's good, dude. It's good. What was it? Was the frothing something? What was the first part?
Froth-corrupted lungs. It's a very graphic.
Froth-corrupted lungs. No, it is. It's, the image is palpable. It's going to haunt me, Ben. But I like a poem at the top and a poem at the bottom. Maybe we should endeavor to do that with every episode of Ridiculous History. What do you think?
I think we give it, you know, I like that. Let's give it the old college shot. Maybe it'll be like our Sufjan Stevens-esque quest to have a story about every state. I think at one time I was like, I'm going to recommend comic books every single episode. You know, we come and go with these.
Or that time where we said we were going to read our bad iTunes reviews and we did it like once and it hurt our feelings too bad. So we never did it again.
Did you have one that you wanted to read?
I did, Ben. I did. I like it. I don't quite get the reference because I've only seen the movie, but this is from the headline is Boring, One Star by Super Nice Broad. Okay, I would disagree with that that moniker there. Ever seen the show What We Do in the Shadows? These two guys are like Colin. They bore you almost to death. Seems like a cool podcast when you read about it, but it's not at all. I tried and tried again. Now I'm done. Well, we will miss you, Super Nice Broad.
And, you know, speaking of that, folks, we certainly hope that you enjoyed being bored to tears today. If you were inspired, why not leave us a review? You can find us on Apple Podcasts, any podcast platform. And we would also love to hear from you on other parts of the internet. We're on Facebook, we're on Twitter, we're on Instagram. We're not on the Rooms to Go website yet.
If you ordered any furniture from Rooms to Go, Ben, I toyed with the idea, but I don't know. I ended up going with Wayfair instead. We're not sponsored by any of these brands, by the way, nor are we sponsored by What We Do in the Shadows. But I will say this, in our next press release, I'm going to have a pull quote and I'm going to say, compared favorably to What We Do in the Shadows.
There we go. That's the spirit. Let's like doctors and their discoveries during times of war, let's try to make something good from something hilarious but bad. How about that?
Totally agree. And if you want to make something good out of something hilarious and or bad, you can do it on our Facebook group, Ridiculous Historians. You can find us as individuals. You can find us as a show on Instagram and all that stuff, but it's not super interesting. I would just go with us as individuals. You can find me. I am only on Instagram. I'm on Twitter, but I just kind of lurk. I don't really use it. My Instagram is @HowNowNoelBrown.
You can find me many different places, Crossroads, at Midnight, at Ben Bolin HSW on Twitter, at Ben Bolin on Instagram. Thanks, as always, to super producer Casey, Everything Is Fine, Pegram. I know we can't see this all because we're, you know, an audio podcast, but I cannot emphasize enough, the background's moving. I like that it's animated. But yes, thank you, Casey. And thanks, of course, as always, to Alex Williams, who composed our banging track.
It is a bit, it's a bop is what the kids call it these days. Thanks to Christopher Hasiotis here in spirit. Jonathan Strickland, a.k.a. The Quister, I believe we're due for him to Zoom bomb us any day now. I can't wait. And I'm not being sarcastic at all when I say that. I look forward to going tete-a-tete once more with The Quister. You'll have to remind me of where our balance is in terms of like point spread. That was a very convoluted way of saying, are we ahead or behind in the great game of dueling? With the Quister, which is no small task.
Ah, yes. Jonathan Strickland, a.k.a. The Quister. Is he A, one of our dear friends, B, our Sheryl Crow-level nemesis, or C, all of the above? The answer is up to history.
Follow your hearts, folks. We'll see you next time. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
This episode of Ridiculous History is brought to you by Avalon Waterways. Ben, are you in major need of a vacation right now?
Noel, you're a mind reader. I am, and aren't we all?
We are. While cruising remains popular, there's something big happening in the industry, and that is, my friend, smaller ships.
True story. The intimate ships of Avalon Waterways can go where the big ships can only dream, through winding passageways of rolling vineyards and castled hills, into the heart of timeless cities and storybook villages.
That sounds like a delight. See how Avalon's smaller ships promise greater discoveries, fewer people, and more of everything.
Limited time special offers await at avalonwaterways.com.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you, from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
This is Raquel Willis from Queer Chronicles. Right now, there are close to 500 anti-LGBTQ plus bills in state legislatures across the country. Lambda Legal is leading the charge against these hateful bills that target mostly trans and non-binary people. You can fight discrimination and help write the next chapter of Lambda Legal history. To learn more about their open cases and to donate, visit lambdalegal.org. That's lambdalegal.org.